I'm Tommy Beardmore.
I'm Adam DiCarlo.
And welcome to Before the Break, a podcast for actors
by actors,
brought to you by Book It. It's really going well. Go ahead, Adam.
This week, we are so excited to meet our guest. He's a true working actor's actor. He's had recurring roles on such shows as Succession, The Loudest Voice, The Path, Everything Sucks, and Longmire, just to name a few. He's also appeared in the films Brittany Runs a Marathon, The First Purge, Sully, The Visit, and Let's Be Cops. Oh, and he's had Broadway and off-Broadway credits. He's done it all. Please welcome the incredibly talented Patch Darrah. Welcome to the show, Patch.
We did it. We did it. Hi, Patch. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, fellas.
Thanks for taking the time. Where in the world are you, man?
I'm in where I moved out of the city about 4 years ago to this little village. It's only about 20 minutes north of Manhattan, but it's a whole different world out here.
Is it next to Bear Mountain?
It's near Bear Mountain.
Yeah, I've been there, that place. I've been through that town, and I'm telling you, I was like, I want to live here.
Yeah, we're my wife grew up here, and I started coming up here, and then we shot The Path one town over in Nyack.
Uh-huh.
And I was just spending more and more time here, and then about 4 years ago, we thought, are we going to get a place in Brooklyn, or are we going to get a place here in Piermont? So we decided Piermont, and it's been great. It's been, since the fall of 17.
Yeah, I bet you're, and even with COVID and everything, I bet you were already in a position where as everybody flew the coop, you were already safely outside of the war zone, you know?
Yeah, we actually had a few friends who ended up moving up here, and we've got the state park a block away, and we had a very, as far as, you know, quarantining goes, we did all right.
Good man. Yeah. let's get started. Where did this all begin? Was it early? Was it in college? Was it after? What was your path and how did it begin?
It was really early. I never really gave it a lot of thought. I definitely got more serious in high school. I think when I stopped playing football and was like, the thing I like best about being on the football team is the skits that we do at football camp every year. And I was like, I think I can let that go and get a little more focused on acting. And a couple friends who were older, because, you know, in high school theater, everyone hangs out with each other. And,
right.
And I had a few friends that were really encouraging. And then, yeah, I auditioned for drama schools. My mom and I took the train to Chicago. I grew up in Michigan.
Birmingham, Michigan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
where's that on the mitten?
That's like over here. It's
bottom left, like bottom
near,
center.
Near Detroit. It's a, you know, did you ever see the movie 8 Mile with Eminem?
Sure, of course.
I grew up on 15 Mile.
Got it.
Basically, they make fun of guys like me in the movie.
Got it. Okay. yeah. And how long were you in the Midwest then?
I was born in Toronto. My family moved to Michigan when I was 2 and I left right after I turned 18. And have basically just been in New York ever since with, you know, stints other places. Probably the longest I was out of New York. I don't feel like I was ever out of the city for more than like 6 weeks. But I tried to move to LA. This play that I did, that you probably have heard of called The Glass Menagerie. We did.
No.
No, it doesn't run about.
You were with Ben McKenzie on that, right?
Yeah. So we started it in New Haven at the Long Wharf Theater. Then they ended up moving to the Roundabout Theater. And Josh Charles did it with us in New Haven. And then this great actor, another great actor, Mike Mosley, did it in New York. And then Ben, another great actor, did. So we had a different gentleman caller every production, but we moved that to LA, and I was kind of like, you know, been doing a lot of New York theater for a long time, and felt like hanging out in LA for a while. And a couple of my friends were moving out there at the same time to do series. I stayed out there, but then I started with a new agency. Probably this is like 10 years ago. I have a really good memory, but I'm really bad at chronology.
Give me 3-5 pages of dialogue, but ask me when something happened.
No kidding.
When did I do that?
I'll get a whole script down in 5 days, but I can't remember your name from 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, exactly. It's Kara.
Selective memory, man.
Yeah. So when I started with them, they said, you know, why don't you come back and start with us in New York? And that was that. And that was I think that was about 10 years ago now. I don't know, you know, we still think, I mean, now everything's changed. I feel like, you know, that was still long ago enough that it was like things weren't on tape as much. There was a lot more film and TV production happening out there. Now, you know, people move to Atlanta or Pittsburgh or anywhere really. And you know, it's easier to do it from, you know, other places. It wasn't really like something I gave too much consideration. Am I going to do this or not? And now it's like, well, what the fuck else would I do? I'm like, I have no other skills. So.
Yeah, it's funny. There's so many hubs now for this. And especially since the pandemic, you know, everything being remote self-tapes, it's like,
yeah,
you can put yourself on tape for anything, anywhere.
Yeah. And because they don't want to be flying people in as much, a lot of the shows aren't saying, you know, for guest spots and stuff, they're not pulling everyone from New York and LA. They're saying, oh yeah, let's use some of our local talent. But I feel like that's, especially in Atlanta, there was some great actors on Sully that were, you know, these guys that just grind it out in Atlanta. And, it's a smaller pond for those roles. I'm always happy when I see one of them pop up and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's on everybody's radar ever since, say, The Walking Dead and maybe the early thousands as Atlanta was blowing up, this sort of idea that we don't have one Hollywood anymore, you know, and the ability to be an actor kind of wherever you are. If you're close to one of the six major markets, you can easily be a local hire, you know, if you're willing to drive and all that stuff. So acting is more accessible now, which is unbelievable. And what is it? There's 530 some shows filming in North America. And even 12 years ago, it was less than double. It was less than, you know, 220, I think. So things are changing. I want to get back to New York. You going to New York at 18, I can't imagine doing anything at 18, because from 18 to 22, I was just in college. Like, I just needed to grow. I was still a kid. I had not developed yet to be able to handle something so big as being taken out of the Midwest and thrown to New York City. What was it like when you got there? And how did you fit? How did you settle in and get that training?
Yeah. You know, I think I was so excited to get in that conservatory world and be around a lot of different types of people. And I think if there's any kind of driving force behind me wanting to be in the arts, it's a curiosity about other people. And I think I was really ready for that. And our school was so militant that there wasn't a lot of time to fuck around.
You're talking about your college experience.
Yeah.
Juilliard.
Yeah. So because for a lot of the kids, I mean, now they take more people out of high school, but my year, which was 1995, there was 7 of us out of high school, and pretty much everybody else was transfers, or in some cases it was grad school for them, but we were all in the same group. So there was different levels of maturity. I remember one of the teachers saying to me, you know, like, when you try to be funny in class, everyone just looks at you and goes, oh, fucking high school. And I was like, well, I just got out of high school.
Well, guess what?
I mean, I recall
that would be one thing if you were 25 and they were like, Pat, you're really acting like a high schooler, but you're like, I literally just got out of high school. Yeah.
Well, you go to any improv level one and you see 25-year-olds, they're acting like 17-year-olds. Right. I'm just saying. I mean, everybody wants to be the funniest guy in the room.
Yeah. So I feel like, but there, you know, when I will say when I got out of school, I, you know, shortly after I graduated, turned 22. And I think me and a couple other guys that I'm still really close with from my class, I think we all kind of felt like, oh, we never got that college experience.
Yeah.
Let's live it up. And like, you know, me and two of my friends didn't really like explode out of school. One of my friends who I ended up moving in with right away was the only guy in our class who didn't have an agent. He's now going on to probably be the most successful guy in our class.
Now that should teach you something. I mean, for those listening, very rare. What's interesting is a lot of people who don't do well in college end up excelling really, really well past it. So, you know, FYI, if you're kind of behind, there are more than enough stories of people who were in your shoes and things sprouted later, you know, that's just part of it.
And he, but we also like would hop in my van and drive around the country to go to Phish concerts. So like, you know, we were like, let's make up for that.
Good for you. Cause you should have had that. And you know, it's tough because you got to start your career as someone who went to a Big Ten college for the first 4 years, I was thinking, what would have happened if I just went to Columbia? What would have happened if I just went? I would have not drank so much and wasted 4 years. But at the same time, I met people that I'll never forget. My acting was actually partying and getting the experience, and that informed so much of my perspective in my acting. You know, totally. So I think we both had the both worlds there, where you got to taste a little bit after, and I got to taste a little bit after mine, you know? So
yeah, definitely. And I think it is, it's so important. I think that it's my understanding that the program I went through has changed a lot. And one of the things that they think that they've started to change, which I would be a proponent of is to say, like, give the kids a little more life and make, you know, first of all, that training program, we were the last class to have like a lot of the old guard original teachers.
Old school. Yeah.
Yeah. So the training was still kind of geared towards a traveling Shakespeare company is what your career is going to be. So maybe it makes sense to have 4 speech classes a day. But I think that there's something to be said about having a life, you know, having experiences, because anymore now I'm like, I'm really only interested in like, what does an actor really have to say about what it's been like for them to be alive? You know, and I think that authenticity is really like become more of the currency than it used to be. But yeah, especially on stage, I feel like, because you know, the director is going to control more the camera stuff, the perspective, but when you're really up there with, you know, the audience, there's nothing in between you guys. You know, I feel like you can see someone give a great performance, but then the really great ones are the ones where you feel like someone's saying, here I am.
In there, right, right, where they've tapped something.
I know what this is.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't do that just in a classroom. It has to, like, you've got to get your heart broken and stuff like that.
Yeah. It's interesting. A lot of those musical theater schools, people come out and, you know, you can just tell they've never left those confines of that theater room. Right. And in order to act, you gotta tap into experiences. So that's why it's really, if you're not in acting school and getting the acting major and getting your MFA, that's fine, because you're experiencing life, and some of the best actors out there do not have an acting degree.
Yeah, totally. And I think again, that curiosity that there's always, it's one of the things I've loved about moving out here is, you know, we literally live right on Main Street. Like we're amongst all different kinds of people, you know, like I'll go hanging, play poker with the guys at the firehouse. You know, it's not like I'm just at a reading with a bunch of actors, you know, which I definitely had a lot of years of that too. And that's great. And there's lots to learn there too.
I bet you feel more human.
Yeah, I think you get, you know, even like even just like being in a relationship, you know, I think there was a stretch there in my career where I felt like, oh, I've got to be alone. I've got to just be totally obsessed with the work. And working with some older actors who I was really fortunate to kind of have as more earlier career, and not just teachers, but mentors, and getting to work, you know, especially for multiple seasons or for, you know, multiple productions, really seeing like, oh yeah, part of what makes them so good is that they know what it's like to have a child and, you know, or any myriad life experience you can have. And, you know, it's not just about, you know, being in your room and being like Salieri about it, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It goes back to experience, and experience will always benefit and amplify your work.
Yeah. Yeah. And the authority to say, no, everyone shut up and listen, because I know what the hell this is about, you know, which is that kind of like pact with the audience. Like, I'm going to put in the work so that you can trust and you can just relax because, you know, we've got you.
Yeah. That's a bit really important, is when an actor is like, I got it. You know, that feeling of you, because at the edge of your seat, you're just hoping and praying that everything's okay. You can't help but feel that. And when you see somebody so damn in it and so good, it's like, you can just let it go and just enjoy it. And it comes from the experience, you know? There's no way that you can confidently attack anything if you don't have that feeling of conviction, inner conviction, you know?
Yeah. I think that's like where the, you know, the research, I feel like I saw Adam Driver say this thing. I was away quite a bit and alone in a hotel room recently. I was watching a lot of those Hollywood Reporter roundtables. It's kind of like what we're doing, you know.
Yeah. Like around awards season when they get all the nominees.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And he was saying, you know, they're like, what's some advice you would give to your younger self? And he was like, you know, that it doesn't have to be as hard as I used to make it for myself. And I thought that's really interesting, because I've been thinking about that too. Like, you know, it's not like a barter system where, well, if you do this, you know, nothing lets you off the hook for being in the moment. At the same time, I think the basics of just like research, and I had a very, I had a small part that was made even smaller in the editing room, where I played Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones's son in this movie, or son-in-law.
Hope Springs?
What's that?
Hope Springs?
Hope Springs, yeah. And you know, I don't mean to sound like, it's hard to talk about Meryl Streep and not sound like a pretentious dickhead, but I'm going to
go ahead. Go ahead.
You know, like, what was so amazing was I was like, oh yeah, she does the work. She does, you know, like, she was, from the moment we met, was my boy. And how are you? Do you think you call me mom? And how long do you think you guys have been together? And we get along, right? I think you and I get along. It was like, right, let's take the time, even though it's just this two little scenes we're going to have, and mostly funny. Like, yeah, that's the basic shit. I mean, she also had other things that I was like, wow, there's only way you can do 50 movies before you learn how to do that.
No kidding.
But you know, some
you
of it.
You finally rap and you're like, Meryl, it's such a pleasure to meet you. My name's Patch.
Exactly.
She introduces herself at the end of the films.
No, she was so, she was actually so mothering. I was like, oh, that's part of the being in character is, oh, I brought this from craft services for you. Like,
and what does that do? It enhances the experience for you. That's her gift to you as a character, as an actor, to be able. And that's why when people bitch about method actors, you know what, as long, if they're not being carried in the wheelchair to that extent, but if someone's in it, it really helps the energy of the moment of the scene of whatever's happening.
Yeah.
We believe it more, you know, and some people are just like cracking jokes and texting and then action. It's like, come on, like, let's,
especially with the phones.
I know.
I'm like,
I know.
sometimes, it's like, okay, are we going to play the game? Like, who can be the last to show up to set? Who then can be the last one to get off their phone after they call action? Like, what is this shit? I also think, yes, it can go obnoxiously the other way. And I've been in that situation a few times in the last couple of years where it's like, it's a little bit insufferable. Like, okay, well, especially if you're just going to mumble all the lines anyway, I don't know why you need to stay in this kind of thing or what that thing is, but
right.
I don't want to name any names.
Now, let's talk about getting out of Juilliard.
Yeah.
And getting your bearings, and you got that agent most likely from a,
like a showcase.
Right? Yep. And how was it starting out those first few months, couple of years, however long it took for traction to gain? What was the struggle like? What were you dealing with?
I was very lucky to, I think definitely it helped my parents feel more supportive when I got accepted to Juilliard. I think they felt like, okay, maybe you're not crazy. My mom was always very supportive of being in the arts, and is very interested in the arts herself. So I think that really helped. I think of all the, all the bitching and the scared phone calls. I also moved in with my best friend, Michael Chernus, and, I had an agent, but basically was just going out for regional plays. He and I started a band together, which Annie Baker ended up going on and writing a play for us called The Aliens, which used a bunch of our songs, which really validated those years of all the smoking weed and writing. But it was, it sucked. It also really sucked because people were like, oh, people get out of Juilliard and they feel really entitled. And I'm like, yeah, I think if you were at school 6 days a week in a very militant platform where you're there till 10 o'clock at night every day and there at 9 o'clock every morning for 4 years straight, and it's a lot of like lashing that you're taking every day, you would feel kind of entitled. So I think it was a tough transition. And like I said, I also felt like, I don't even know, I was so burnt out. They also changed the program now where like, they used to do like a rep season. So I was like, okay, we're doing like The Winter's Tale, The Cherry Orchard, and then this Lanford Wilson play and the showcase.
Just real nice light stuff.
Yeah. and then, you're supposed to come out and hit the ground running. And I think, sort of hitting on what we were talking about earlier, that feeling like, oh, I missed something in my life personally, but also, I was really lucky. I was in a relationship and what I'm starting to say is I had the support so that when I was catering at the Holocaust Museum, which people always think that's like some sort of bad joke. I
did the same thing down south by the financial district. Yeah. Did that.
Beautiful setting.
Yeah. There's a great place in the back corner where you can smoke cigarettes.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. So, it was hard. And I think also there was some kind of expectation because where I grew up was like right near Robin Williams. I think my family was like, well, you're obviously going to be the next Robin Williams. And, so to feel like, okay, well, when I play Romeo at the Guthrie, like that's a big deal. And to feel like, I think at a certain point, as I got a few more years out of school, I feel like I started to come back into it creatively and feel that spark again. And then started doing shows. I realized like, I'm not really, still kind of spinning my wheels because all the plays I'm doing are out of town. And I remember getting a credit card and saying, okay, I'm going to like rack up the credit card debt. And just so that I can be in New York and do these off Broadway plays for no money, just because they're in New York.
Sounds insane when we're talking about it, but to us, it's like, this is what you do. You go into $14,500 in credit card debt.
Oh,
and you just figure it out.
Yeah. And it mattered though. It changed things.
Yeah.
To be,
that is a real thing though. Like just, you know, 4 years of Juilliard, you know, when you're that young and to come out of it and to be a part of a place like that, like you were saying, you do kind of, you, depending on how hard you go there, you know, you miss out on a lot of stuff because you're just so tunnel vision on school and the work and reading and performing and da, 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 that, you know, you come out of it and you're supposed to just go, go, go. And you're like, I need a minute. Oh my God. I'm physically, I'm emotionally, financially just exhausted.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you got to kind of rewire your brain and get some experiences and re-spark, like you were just saying. That must, just be exhausting.
Also, like playing just your own age. Like, you know, those plays I mentioned, like I was playing like 40 and 50 year olds in college.
Oh, yeah.
And that was, I remember doing the showcase being like, okay, we're doing like Howard Carter's Boy's Life.
Hmm.
And I was like, right, I'm just playing someone, my own age. And that was a transition too, I think. And something that I've enjoyed about getting older is, I think, I don't know, I have this theory that they let you get away with more acting the older you get. When you're young, they kind of want you to be really good looking and really stupid. And like not as interesting. Maybe that's not true anymore, but
maybe the dimensions of the characters are a little bit more accepted and a little bit more enhanced and diverse, and we, you know,
you can get away with more characterization, I think, as you get older.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yes. A
little further from yourself.
Interesting. So as far as go ahead, Adam.
We always
go ahead, Adam, you fucking asshole. Go ahead, Adam. Go ahead.
So, Patch, as you're getting your creative spark back after a minute, are you thinking strictly in terms of on stage theater work? Are you also kind of thinking maybe on camera? Where were you kind of shooting for?
I think I was, you know, it was hard for me to imagine. I didn't know anything about being on camera. We had one class, I think we had like, we went four times to this class with a casting director for a soap opera. And, you know, it's like, there's a whole different language to it. There's a whole different process to it. And there's so much that to me was unknown and therefore scary that it took some, you know, I guess I'm just didn't have the confidence to say, well, I'll just figure it out. Or how different could it be? At the end of the day, I don't think the acting is all that different. But the process is so different. And
couldn't be more different.
Couldn't be more different. And also,
theater, you know, you rehearse for months and months and months and months and months and months. On camera, it's like, all right, we're going to do a marking rehearsal and then we're shooting this and it's going to live forever.
And it's going to live forever. Exactly. And people say, well, oh, you can, you know, with theater, it's a live thing. So like, you know, you can't stop where, you know, you can with camera, you can always do another take. And I'm like, yeah, but when you're starting out, they're not going to hire you people who are asking for another take or screwing up or wanting to do it again. I've like asked for another take, I think twice in my career. And
were they on big projects or small projects?
One was really big.
And okay.
It was really terrifying. But I was like, this is it. This is the one time we're doing this scene. And this is the one time we're doing this setup. And I was like, I know they're going to really like this shot. And it was Clint Eastwood. And I was like, he does not, you know, I guess I didn't know this.
He moves real quick, right?
Yeah. It's, and there's,
he has his crew that he's had forever and they,
years, they know exactly what it's, they're all directing it together.
It's how he makes a fucking movie every year. And you're like, didn't you just come out with one? And it's like, boom, 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 boom.
And one take, and I guess I saw on, I think it was on that Hot Wings show, they were talking to Matt Damon, and he was talking about that soccer movie he did with Clint Eastwood, and that
Hot Ones. Yeah.
He asked for another take. Clint Eastwood was like, "Why would you want to waste everyone's time?" And, but he let me have it. He was like, "All right, stop.
That's amazing.
Set it back
Why
up."
Would you?
And then I was like, "Oh God, this better
be the best fucking thing Clint's ever seen." Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Was it worth it?
Yeah.
Done. Could you imagine? They cut, and he was like, "For that?
For that?"
Ah!
I don't know.
You're like, oh.
Yeah. No, he was so, it was kind of wild because he was so, I guess his persona is just so intense, you know? I mean, you think of him as being like, to me, he's Dirty Harry, you know? It's like, or Unforgiven. And I hadn't met him. I just made a tape and suddenly I was like, oh my God, this is what? This is happening? And, but I got to meet the air traffic controller who I played and go to the tower with him for a day and meet all of his coworkers and stuff. And so I was just commenting as we were doing a marking rehearsal. I mean, basically I'm just sitting there the whole time, you know, how amazing the recreation of the set was. Cause this, their tower
on
Long Island. I just been there and the set designer came up and was like, "How did you get in there? They wouldn't let me in there. I tried to get in." And I was like, I found the guy I'm playing on Facebook and he's kind of a legend now. And so he got me in. It was hard to get in. I mean, it was like high security, of course.
That's so resourceful on your part.
Well, he was an awesome guy. He was super into it. So it was like, it didn't take me convincing him at all. But anyway, this guy's like, "Oh my God." And I said, "The only thing is that I think JFK, it should be below LaGuardia. So it should be like Teterboro and just the order of the, you know, the airports." But I was like, "You could obviously, no one's going to know that. And you could also fix it in post-production with a CGI thing." And he was like, and so then suddenly I sort of feel this hovering and it was like, "Oh, there's Clint Eastwood." And they're like, "Oh yeah. Have you met the boss yet?" I said, no. "Hey." And he's like, "Sounds like you know more about this than anyone. Why don't you talk my crew through how we're going to shoot this?" And I honestly, I like was like, "I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry." He's like, "No, everyone listen up. And I was like,
fuck.
Okay. But that's what I mean. He couldn't have been more like, "You know, so tell us and we'll do it. Okay, great. That sounds great. You're going to get up there. You're going to walk over there. You can sit. Great." Like, you know, I feel like the really great people, Paul Newman, same iconic person, couldn't be more generous and open and want to know what everyone's ideas are. You know, I think I've just been lucky that way to like have nice working experiences by and large.
Well, it sounds like you've been very, very fortunate and leading up to that.
Yeah.
Was it always fortune? Was it always luck from when you got repped in through, you know, past the band days and the credit card and all that? When did things start to turn and how did they?
I think starting to get more, you know, guest spots and there were more shows coming to New York.
What year is this, by the way, Patch? I hate to date you. I'm sorry.
I want to say 2000.
Okay.
Let's say 2009, seven, eight, nine, maybe. Maybe 2004 or five. And then I would be like, "Oh, I actually really like this now. And I think I figured some things out." And then the job would be
when you were done with Juilliard, there wasn't nearly as many things filming here in New York,
like
TV wise, which now it's insane, but yeah,
there was
Law and Order, Sex and the City, you know,
and and then there was that other one I can't remember, but
because it's such a TV town now, which sort of was 2009, 2010, it started, and now it's grown and grown and grown.
Yeah, I had a recurring role on this very short lived one season NBC show. called Mercy, which me and Michael Chernus played brothers on the show.
Hey.
Which was unbelievable. It was like, you know, my agent called and was like, so it looks like you're going to get this part and you're going to be playing the brother of Michael Chernus. I was like, I know, I'm looking at him in my living room right now. Yeah. And I was the brothers to Taylor Schilling. And then they went on to do Orange is New Black, where he played her brother again. I never was on the show. But
shitty. You know,
did do about maybe half the episodes of the season. I think I started to figure out, like, oh, it's like it's more of a live thing. Like, the writers are seeing what you're doing. I remember after the Christmas party that we had, suddenly my role got a lot bigger. And I was like, oh, because they saw me and they see how Taylor and I are together. They see me and Diego. And so, oh, they're going to write that in, you know? And then I think the battle becomes, oh, they like what you're doing. So then they just keep giving you the same thing. And I'm like, no, what's really great on TV is then now you got to subvert it. And this week do something that's out of character. Oh, we didn't see that, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of always evolving and growing. And
yeah. It's a
they can see you in real time and be like, oh, yeah.
Yeah. So I think I was learning some things about that and more shows coming. And then 2014, I did a couple. I finished doing Boardwalk Empire, and I did this show, this movie called The Visit, this M. Night Shyamalan movie. But pretty much other than that, I was doing a play, dovetailing plays the whole year.
Wow.
So it was like three plays, paying to be in it, essentially. And it just burned me out, man. I was like living at the theater. And, you know, I'm not sure. I'm all for better wages and better working conditions. I don't know if we want to get into all that. But I understand. I mean, I think that's one thing that's really great about the theater is you are just – huddled together like that for that intense period of time. But I don't know how conscious it was, but I was sort of like, okay, maybe I'm not going to just be like, what plays are happening this season? Maybe I'm going to try to focus a little more and got this Recur on the Path, which was great. Started spending more time up here. Everything Sucks was, a really big deal for me because it was the first time I was a series regular.
Wow. That's a big, big step.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a big, it's hard enough to get a guest star for struggling actors. It's hard to get in that room even, and then book it.
Yeah.
But when you cross that line,
yeah,
that is a whole other depth.
It was, you know, and it was something that I gotten close to a few times with, you know, tests and stuff.
Yep.
And, but that show also was like, you know, it took place in basically my last year of high school. It felt very much like destined to me anyway. Maybe that's a lucky thing to feel that way too, but it was also amazing to like work with all these kids and there was so much talent and respect and fun had on that set and with that crew. It was all, you know, we were in Portland and they've got an amazing crew out there. I literally am still very close with some of those guys. In fact, one of them was just at my wedding a month ago.
How about that?
Yeah.
And you tie that geography, that's town. It's great when you go out of town to shoot something because that place is a place of nostalgia forever for you.
Yeah. Oh my God. We still go, like we try to go once a year.
Yeah. That's great. You
know, yeah. And I think I realized with that job that like, oh, there's sort of this low grade story that I've been telling myself that it's going to be really scary and intense when you get to that next thing. And it wasn't like that at all.
Interesting.
You know, the creators and showrunners were the best guys and the two producers with them at Midnight Radio were the best guys, you know, and everyone at Netflix was like incredible. I mean, they, you know, then they canceled the show, but while we were doing it, they were amazing people and we had a ton of fun together. It was, and I think that was a good lesson too. but so much of it, you know, is just like learning and getting more comfortable. I had a friend whose sister just got married, and we were down for her because we've gotten pretty close to their family. And he was saying, you know, I think I'm started to have this shift where I feel more anxious in my own life than I do when I'm on set. I think I agree with that. It's almost a more calm place because there's so much chaos, and maybe it's that you get to have the mask on too, but if you're feeling good in the part, you know, you really, there's no greater feeling of focus and ease. And I think that's where a lot of the joy starts coming back to it too.
Totally. And it's so easy to have that joy be stripped just out of cynicism and being burnt out. And I imagine, you know, that, preferring to be working, I think that is just the demonstration of like how right you are for this business and the work. You know, when you're so comfortable and at peace, when you're working on set, where most people would be. I mean, I blacked out my first network TV gig. I mean, I only had one line. Thank God, I did not remember anything.
It's so scary when you're like
telling me that I'm cute. Other than that, yeah,
a co-star or a guest star or something like that, where like you're entering this huge machine that goes every day. And it's like sort of jumping into a game of double dutch, and you're just like, you're in and you're out. But when you like have that fucking amazing experience of being a regular on a show with like a family kind of atmosphere, and you're there every day, and you're a part of the machine. You're not just coming in for a day.
I definitely felt very aware of that with people who were coming and guesting and co-starring, to think like, right, there's nothing worse than going there and no one's talking to you, no one's telling you anything, and you feel like, oh, they all know each other and they're all having their inside jokes. I feel it's like so important when you are in that position to make sure that you bring everybody in as much as possible.
That inclusion, so that people feel, and that's great, Patch, because I know what that is. You walk into, especially if you're a guest star or whatever, everybody's already there.
Yeah.
They already have their, you know, and for you, because you know both sides, you're able to like responsibly handle the responsibility of being a series regular, you know. I mean, it's the same thing like Adam or me when I'm on set. Everybody's important, you know.
Yeah.
The PA, you know their first name. You include everybody because it's that sense of community that makes the whole experience worthwhile.
Yeah, okay, sometimes I've had crazier experiences with background artists than I would
have wanted. Lord in heaven, do we? We should do a whole episode about it.
But then at the same time, I've had amazing experiences where it's like, right, you know, in this scene, we do know each other. So let's not have this hierarchy here. Like, and on the path, they brought a lot of them back. And eventually we're like, you know, giving them more character and lines and stuff. And it was like, that's part of building the world.
Yeah.
And I think when you see good background on a show, it's incredible.
I agree.
This period piece that like, you know, takes place in the 1890s. And one of the things that was just so cool about it was like, oh my God, there's like 150 background people in period costumes, and they all had to look Italian. And it was like, wow, that does a lot for authenticity there for everybody. And there was a lot of one shots, you know, single shots for the entire scene. So there was a lot of choreography and a lot of collaboration with, okay, you're going to have to move that goat out of the way so that I can walk here and then the camera can come here. I mean, it was a lot of that. And they were, you know, a lot of them were there for the whole length of the movie and really part of it. And I think it makes a big difference. And when you see someone abusing the power and treating people badly, it trickles down so fast. It's like, oh, right. So the number one is doing that. So now the supporting cast are treating these people like shit. And you know, it's like, why?
It's like siblings in a family. I mean, that's how my mom described it. It was like, if Tommy bullies Brian, then Brian bullies John. And then, oh, look, John bullies Will, but Will doesn't bully anybody because he's the nicest guy. So we skip and go to Michael. And then Michael bullies Annie and Caroline. Like, that's what it is. It's that, it's that toxic energy.
He has a huge family. Guy, you just went through so many names, Patch. Like,
that's just the
shit.
Ones who are living in the house.
They're hunting.
Yeah, Tommy, Jimmy, Carrie, Kelly.
Yeah. No, it's so true, though. I feel like there's also – you know, something he said about that, about, you know, staying, you worded it better than I'm going to, but it's like, I think there's, we're in this little window right now where I feel like people still remember that we couldn't work for a long time. And so like, there's like this new appreciation for being there.
Oh, yeah.
Less, you know, like less attitude, like, oh God, we get to like go to work. But I think the full-time job of any actor is to just try not to get bitter. And it's so hard. I have said that to an older actor friend of mine. I was like, it's just like, how do actors not get bitter? And he's like, actors don't get bitter? He's like, you don't think I'm fucking bitter? It's like, yeah, it's really hard, because I also think that the more, you know, I think of someone like Sarah Paulson, who I did a play with at Williamstown that ended up moving to New York and, you know, carried on a friendship over the years. Like, I remember as she really started to go up and up, it was like, she's like, oh yes, but you also have to know I'm dealing with so much rejection more than ever, because, you know, the more opportunities you're getting, the bigger the opportunities.
And the carrot gets bigger.
Yeah,
you know, and now, you lose and now you're talking
about, I mean, this was, maybe she's not the right example anymore, because she's probably just fielding offers. But you know what I'm saying? Like, there is, I remember even just moving to this new agent 10 years ago, I was like, this is awesome. And then I was like, oh, this is really hard, because I'm going out for so much more stuff. It's bigger stuff. I'm getting my hopes up. You know, this is a life-changing job. And then to not get, you know, or they're going to fly out to LA and now that you're going on the red eye back home, you know, like, and to
and
try to
so
not
close to it. And it's stuff that you're like, oh, this role, you know, it's not toss away lines or something. It's like shit you really, really
want.
Yeah.
And stuff that you really want to do. And, you know, I feel like the part of like, how do you not get bitter? It's like to try to feel like it's not, you have your own life, but also it's not just about black and white. Did I get the job or not? Getting close means something, and you give yourself that and be like, okay, but okay, you're getting in that room now. Oh, now you've made a fan with that casting person. Like,
exactly.
That's
exactly.
You guys know from, you know, your own experiences also to imagine doing these conversations.
Every conversation, it's like I lost this, but then a year later I got that. And what did Pooja say last week? She said, rejection is redirection. Redirection. And Patch, I don't know if you agree with this, but when you start acting, I think it's really important to say, I'm going to audition 1,000 times. I'm going to get really close about 250 times. I mean, screen tests, flying out and all that stuff. I'm going to lose 700 and I'm probably going to book like 50. I mean, like as far as like a decent first 10 years, that's just what it is. So when people lose something and they get all bent out of shape and cynical and burn out, it's like, what did you expect, to book everything that you went out for?
I have that affliction though, where I always think I'm going to get everything.
Because like, you're fucking good.
Because like, okay, you went to Juilliard, we get it. Because
you
Patch.
Went to Juilliard.
Oh,
hello, Pats.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Patch, what were the things?
It wasn't when you got out of school. It was all the years later that you were like, I went to fucking Juilliard.
I know. It's not every time, but it's like if I really connect with something, then I think,
yeah, of course.
But also, I mean, there's a lot of great people doing it, and I feel like I know a lot of them, and there's plenty of times where I shouldn't say I always expect, because there's plenty of times where I think, you know, who could really do this part really well? That guy who ends up getting it.
Yeah.
You know, and And there's a few. I actually, when I got Everything Sucks, I was doing Longmire in Santa Fe, and I, Paul Sparks is a pal from being around the theater. I don't think we've done workshops and stuff together, and we've
hung out a bunch.
He's the best. And he and Michael Shannon were staying in the same hotel, and they were doing that show Waco. I think it was for Paramount. Mm-hmm. And I was hanging out more with Paul, but sometimes I'd see Michael too, and Shea Whigham, because those guys, they all kind of work on everything together. They're the nicest people. And I was like, you know, when I got it, I texted Paul. I was like, come meet me right now, you know, at the Sky Bar or whatever. And Mike was there, and I was like, you know something, guys. A lot of times I get a part and I think, oh, what would Mike Shannon do with this? What would Paul Sparks do? And it's really informative. And I think, oh, I aspire to, you know, kind of, but you know, I don't brood like that. And this part, this goofy principal in 1995 in Oregon, this is my part. What an asshole. They're like, okay, congratulations.
Working actors deserve affordable and convenient coaching. That's why we created Book It, America's fastest growing one-on-one remote acting coach service, all from your device. We're not just coaches, we're working actors too. From Broadway and voiceover animation to TV, film, and commercial, real actor coaching from real actors, catered especially to you and your path. Anytime, anywhere, we're here to train you, to guide you, to prepare you, to book it. For more information, visit workingactorpro.com/book it.
So before we let you go, Patch, there's one question that I want to find out. When you said you got a different agent, say 10 years ago ish. And when things started to, well, you know, when we get a new rep, new things start to happen. We get into new rooms and all that. What do you credit those bookings, the increase in frequency and the bookings and all that stuff as far as things going your way, what do you credit the components that you were using that kind of ensured that success?
Well, I think the gaining more experience definitely helped. I also think, realizing how competitive it is. I mean, like, I think hard work is important, you know, and winning the auditions are important because, you know, I feel like I used to like, okay, come in and read. I mean, I don't ever hold the script anymore. I try to costume and props and choreography. I mean, I'm a little bit psycho about it, but I think that some of that is required. Other times, go and do it once and somehow it clicks. You know, you can also go overanalyze for sure. But I think, you know, I was very lucky to have friends in the community, and like Mike Mosley, when we did Glass Menagerie, he's like, you know, my agent really liked you in the show. And I was like, he didn't have to do that. He got me a meeting with them, you know, even though we go up for some of the same parts. And I try to have that same attitude, and that would be the last component, is the not getting bitter, but not just not being bitter, but being super psyched, super positive, even if it's fake. The fake it till you make it, I think some people look at like, well, I'll just act like I have millions of dollars and rack up a lot of credit card debt, and I've certainly done that too. But I think that the belief and the kind of, instead of, you know, we're creative people, and so we're always creating, everyone's creating their realities, but we especially are, because we're always in that channel. And I think when I get caught in a spiral of negativity and bitterness or wanting it too bad, always feeling the want, instead of feeling like grateful for what I have, grateful for what's coming, feel the positive. That's been a huge shift in my thinking. I had a friend, Rebecca Henderson, who's another great actor who you guys should talk to. She was like, would you just try to be positive for 1 week and see what happens? And it was a life-changing week.
Rebecca, I don't have the brain capacity or time.
Rebecca.
And it helped? It helped?
Yeah. Yeah.
It just...
I also read those self-help books. And I know it's cheesy and
no, it's legit. That perspective, you can change your perspective. And yeah, there, I know an actor who would say to somebody, if he sees someone in a good mood, what the hell do you have to be happy about? And I said, dude, I get it. I've been there,
yeah,
but you can't go on like this. No. You can't live in this darkness, and you have the opportunity, you have the power to turn it around, to gain a perspective, yeah, to get grateful, to do those things. I am so into that self-help stuff. I'm so, yeah, into that stuff. If you don't have that, you're just going off of what, you know, whatever you're feeling, yeah, that day, you know?
And I think that Adam Driver thing too, of like, I think for a long time, part of what I was unconsciously doing was suffering. Because I felt like I needed to suffer more to have something to say. I needed to suffer more,
yeah,
to be able to show up and have something to cry about. And Reed Burney, who I absolutely love and I think is arguably the greatest living actor in the world right now, one of them certainly, he was like, ah, don't worry, as you get older, there's just so much more to cry about.
Yeah, welcome to life, buddy.
You're like, can't wait.
Wait.
So, oh, that's, you know, but it's like, you don't need to you can have a happy life and still show up and explore the darkness, but you don't, your whole life doesn't need to live under that cloud,
yeah,
yeah,
for you to feel talented and like you have something to say.
And it's funny, you know, you can do so much and you're always right where you're at and you think, God, I'm really down and everything. We've talked about on this show, sometimes you need that check-in of, right now I am where I was only dreaming of,
right,
10 years ago.
What you're complaining, yeah, about, you dreamed about, right?
Yeah, it's like you got to check in and see where you're at and everything you've done and go, mm-hmm, I'm doing good. You know, this might be a shit week or a shit, yeah, month, maybe even a shit year, but, yeah, sometimes you got to look back at what you've done and go, man, I remember when, yeah, where I am right now was everything I could only dream about. And, you know, that important perspective, yeah, of where you are, it's so important to do, yeah, that check-in every now and then.
And seeing the opportunities wherever they may be. I mean, I think I felt like I just said yes and showed up to every reading I could possibly go to. And, you know, it's unbelievable sometimes to look back and go, right, that one little thing, even though that didn't go anywhere, that person saw that reading and, yep, like, here we are all these years later. Yeah. You don't know what relationship or what, you know, all the little things along the way that's, you know, it's like the butterfly effect.
It all adds up.
All, yeah, of us just flapping our wings as hard as we can, you know?
Yeah. Patch, what you've experienced so much in, frankly, such a little time. You know, there are a lot of actors that are getting out of acting school or maybe in their mid-20s and they're struggling. They're trying to make it. What would you say to them, those people just starting out based on your experiences and what you've learned?
I'm not going to make the joke about you should give up.
Right.
I think a big thing is saying yes. I think a big thing is finding your community and taking part in it, seeing other people's stuff. I think being a supporter and a cheerleader for other people is really important. And I also think, you know, there's also the just really good, really going for it too. And really, like, you know, nothing held back and, you know, nothing distracting. And that's something that's, everyone has their own version of that. You know, I think these things are so great for research because you can be like, I can look anything up and like go to the library, but at the same time it can be very distracting. And I think, looking for the opportunities and where the community is, and just really fucking grinding it out because it is competitive. A lot of people want it, and you know, I don't know, for whatever reason, I woke up the other day and I was like, what is the readiness is all? Where is that from? And shame on me. Juilliard would be upset, but it's from Hamlet. He says it to Horatio, but it's like, right. I was like, right. So like, if you have some time where you're like, where's the auditions? Okay. But what can you do today? Do something every day because the ready, yep. So that you are ready for it and not, well, when I get cast in that, then I'll get ready.
Yep. Opportunity. Success is opportunity meets readiness. I think that's what they say.
Luck is what happens when preparedness meets opportunity. Preparation meets opportunity.
Yeah. To be ready when the door's knocking, not when the door knocks and you open it and you get your shoes on and all that stuff. And then you start working out. And then, that's where I am. I'm like, I haven't worked out in 6 months. And I'm like, when the hell am I going to get that, you know, that basketball? Yeah,
am I going to just play fat guys or what? I don't know.
Patch, I'm sure that everyone's falling in love with you right now. Where can they find you? Are you on the line?
Like people are like, this guy needs to stop name dropping and stop. Let these other guys talk.
Please. This is exactly what we were hoping for. What a great conversation.
Thanks. Well, you know, I'm still on those platforms. Patched Era on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. I try not to tweet as much as I used to.
That's Patch like Patch Adams, DARRAGH. All right. Anything coming up now?
Pipeline?
I did a couple episodes of Succession that's premiering this Sunday. I did two
my
last
favorite
year
show
two this year.
Oh, you're in it this season.
Yeah. But I don't know how much.
Right.
Because like, oh no, you have like a 2-page speech. But then I was like, oh right, but it's playing like they're watching it and having other scenes while they're watching. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Anyway, I was like, that is an incredible group of people over there. The actors on that show and the writing on that show. And then there'll be like,
holy
5-minute scenes with 4 cameras. I didn't even know where the cameras are. And then they'll be like, all right, everyone, free for all. Just say what you want or Patch. I don't know. Why don't you say something to him as you walk by? Like, you know, it was like a thrill. But anyway, that was that's coming out. And I did a horror movie called Old Man with this guy, Lucky McKee, who's made a couple of really cool movies.
Lucky McKee.
And I was like, Lucky McKee and Patch Era are going to get together. Wow. And it doesn't take place. And Stephen Lang is leading that. He was awesome to work with. And then this bigger thing I've been working on, not to say bigger, Lucky, it's a great movie. It was just a bigger production. It's this period drama about Mother Cabrini, who I don't know if you know who that is.
I do. I lived in Cabrini Green. I lived in Cabrini Green in Chicago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I've been going, my writing partner lives on Cabrini Boulevard. I didn't realize she's literally enshrined there. There's a shrine in Chicago. There's one in Denver. There's one in New Orleans. I mean, it's an incredible story. She did so much for children.
It's about time.
Immigrant. And I play this Irish doctor, also an immigrant, who helps kind of save her life. And he volunteers at the Italian hospital in the Five Points. And they have a kind of platonic love for each other that plays out. And she enlists him to help found this hospital. I don't think they'll bring that out until probably a year from now, because I think they'll want to give some of those actors and the movie itself to have a chance to do the whole rollout of festivals. And possibly even awards. I don't know, but yeah.
I saw that on your IMDb and I was like, why does this title seem so, I had auditioned for that film.
No kidding. Yeah.
So you didn't get it, huh, Adam?
No. It was for some Irish doctor. He has like a really platonic relationship.
Well, Patch, it was really nice having you, buddy. Oh, Patch, man. Thank you so much for being here, man.
This was really, so great.
What a treat.
Thank you so much
for stopping by. This was wonderful.
You bet.
Your career is incredible. And we've had a few people on who have had really immense careers, and we say to them, like, and it's true, I feel like you're just still starting. You have so much more to go, and we can't wait to see where you go next and what you do. And
thanks,
dude, Adam. Sky's the limit. Congratulations on everything thus far and everything that's coming to you in the future.
Thank you so much.
And let us know if there's any houses for sale up in your neck of the woods, you know?
Okay, cool. Yeah. Come up, we'll have premieres and that one.
All right, Patch. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
See you later.
See ya.
Bye. You know, this guy if I were a director, I feel like he is a director's actor. He is reliable. He is consistent. Yeah. He's gracious. He's totally. Just too thorough. I mean, what a dream. What a dream.
What a great guy. And it's so funny. You're going to go through and look at things he's done and be like, you've seen him.
I know.
Like, he has so much stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
What
awesome.
A fucking good actor. And he's done everything, and he's just so grounded and
totally.
And like you just said, gracious and what a great guy. What a great interview.
Yeah, it was fun. Very fun.
Excited.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you for coming in and listening to us. You can find out more about
I had to redo the beginning. You're gonna have to redo the end.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next week. You can find out more about Before the Break and how to become a working actor at workingactorpro.com. Follow us on Instagram at Before the Break Pod and Working Actor Pro. You can check out Adam's stuff at adamdecarlo.com and follow him at that Adam DeCarlo. And you can check out my stuff at tommybeardmore.com. You can follow me at Tommy Beyond. Don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a rating, write a review if you like what you heard. Check back next week for an all new episode with an all new guest. Adam, adios.
Later, man. See you next time.
Bye.
You've been listening to Before the Break. The hosts are Tommy Beardmore and Adam DeCarlo. Cover art by Amanda June Boucher. Music by Benjamin Sturley. Before the Break is recorded live from Los Angeles and New York City.